Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben and Mace here with you, as we are every week. And we're bouncing back like the team is hoping to do after its first loss of the season. Still 7-1. Can't be mad at that, right? Unless you go on social media.
Yeah, if you go back over the last 40 years, 7-1 would be good enough to have the best record in the league in 24 of those years after 8 games. So, you know, you're in pretty good shape. You're in prime position to be a contender. The thing is, this year you have 3 teams that are sitting at 8-0, of course, the Bengals, the Patriots, and the Panthers, and the Bengals and the Patriots being most relevant because right now, if the playoffs did start today, which they don't, but if they did, the Broncos would have to play on that first weekend of the playoffs, wild card weekend, and then if they won, would have to go on the road after that. They'd be taking the long way. Of course, Peyton Manning's only Super Bowl win came when he took the long way in 2006. So they actually went on the road in the divisional round, and because of the results elsewhere, end up back at home for the AFC Championship game. So it's certainly not impossible to go from the wild card round to the Super Bowl. And in fact, a lot of teams have done it over the years. Mm-hmm. But I think people are a little frustrated, and it's understandable why. But that being said, I think it was the kind of loss that you can learn from. Mm-hmm. You learn that, okay, you can't dawdle, you can't dither in the first half, you can't dig yourself a 17-point deficit and expect to come out of it against a team that played its best game of the season. I think there's a lesson to be learned from that, and if the Broncos apply it, they can get back on track Sunday.
I mean, it was only a 3-point loss. What was probably most disappointing about it was that they had a chance.
That they had a chance, and then they frittered it away.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'll say this, Aqib Talib feels bad about his two-finger poke in Dwayne Allen's eye that resulted in the one-game suspension, and Chris Harris Jr. in the locker room on Thursday alluded to that. He said he's talked with Talib, that, you know, he there's – there's bad feelings. There's remorse from him about the poke. But that being said, he knows he hurt the team then, and he knows he hurt the team for this week because they're going to have to do without him and go with Bradley Roby and Kayvon Webster as the number 2 and number 3 cornerbacks, along with Chris Harris Jr., of course, who's starting and doing an excellent job. So I think that's the thing, that it was a preventable defeat, and the meltdown, the emotional meltdown toward the end of the game, I think that, more so the poke than you had the penalties in the last minute, or the holding penalty on Danny Trevathan. I don't know what the officials saw. I've watched that play 10 times. I don't see a holding there at all. I have no clue what interpretation of the rules came up, allowed them to come up with a holding call. But that being said, it wouldn't have mattered because, Talib got frustrated, there was 25 seconds left at that point anyway, so it probably wouldn't have made the difference. But you can't have the finger poke. You can't have a play that Malik Jackson mentioned to me on Wednesday, that he remembers, of course, was the one he was called for when he threw a football in the Raider game.
Right.
You can't have those kind of penalties. You're going to have some late hits. If you're an aggressive defense, you're going to have late hits. It's the loss of emotional control that the Broncos have to avoid, and that's something that Kubiak is focused on this week.
Yeah, I mean, it was an uncharacteristic kind of game. To a degree, especially when it comes to turnovers. I mean, I'm not talking about the offense, which has its own turnover problems, but defensively, they didn't force any turnovers because the Colts were able to pick up pressure and able to get the ball out before the pressure culminated and convened on Andrew Luck.
They were able to pick up pressure, and of course, Andrew Luck was willing to stand in and take the hits. If you count plays wiped out by penalty, or you count run plays, he was hit 16 times. He was hit 12 times on dropbacks. Mm-hmm. And he stood in there, and obviously we now know what happened, of course, with the lacerated kidney and the abdominal injury. That's going to knock him out for some time. But he was fearless. I mean, it was I watched him, and it kind of turned football back about 3 or 4 decades to the gunslingers in the pocket who would stand there under heavy rushes, who'd just get hit and hit, and they would stand, they would wait until the last possible second and fire the pass away. It was a courageous effort, and you've got to tip your hat to Andrew Luck, A, and B, you've got to know that there aren't many Andrew Lucks. So I think the Broncos the worst thing that they could do is completely overhaul their defense on the basis of what happened in Indianapolis, because I'm not sure there's going to be another quarterback who will respond to the Broncos' pass rush in the same way that Andrew Luck did.
And moving forward, I mean, getting back on track, Alex Smith is a guy they've had success against previously. They had 5 turnovers against the Chiefs last time they played back in Week 2 on Thursday night. And as a little aside, Thursday night football, it's Thursday right now as we record this, and this is the debut of the new Color Rush uniforms. And
I like what Paul Lucas of Uniwatch.com is calling them, Color Rash.
Yeah. I'm just glad that our Thursday game has come and gone already. Because
yeah.
I would not want to see what kind of
yeah,
what kind of thing they would come up
I'm
for.
I'm not sure about this, because we saw the Jaguars and Titans Color Rush uniforms that they're going to wear next week were revealed on social media today.
The Jaguars one is.
Yeah, the Titans one, if that's what they're going to wear, that's basically their light blue, their usual light blue uniform, or that
it's
now
it's different.
Their alternate. We've seen it for years. And we've even seen it, the light blue jersey with the light blue pants. They've worn that quite a bit over the years. I don't like it. I don't like monochromatic looks unless you're talking about all black or all white. I just don't think it's a good look for football. Doesn't mean I don't like it for basketball or, you know, another sport. But for football, I think the nature of the equipment it lends itself to having different colors, having a full ensemble, and also having the helmet as well. I like a uniform, actually. If I had my perfect uniform involves the helmet matching the pants. Which is the one thing I'd have against the Bronco uniform. Helmet doesn't match the pants.
Yeah. I think the Jaguars one is the worst jersey I've seen.
The gold one, that's just not very sharp at all.
It's not. The shade, like the hue of it's off or something, and it just kind of looks like it's gross.
Here's what I do like tonight, though. Both teams are wearing colors. As in, neither team's wearing white.
Right.
They don't clash. I really like this. I think this is a first step for the league. This was passed a few months ago that on Thursday night teams could wear their colors as long as they didn't clash. So, for instance, if they're close together, like you wouldn't see the Broncos wear navy blue when the Raiders were wearing black.
Right.
But in this scenario, why wouldn't the Broncos wear orange and the Raiders wear their black jerseys? That's what I want to see. But this tonight, like the Bills wearing the red, first time they've ever worn a red jersey, I believe, and the Jets are going to a different shade of green, which is actually closer to their original shade of green.
Kelly green.
Yeah.
I think that kind of clashes with, they have a stripe on their shoulders that's like more of their forest green.
Yes, and they have a stripe on their shoulders, and they did something funky with their helmet. Like it's chrome. Now,
I'd have to take a
if you go on it, you can see some images. AP has already moved a bunch of photos as we do this at 6:23 p.m. on Thursday night. They've got it's like there's a chrome tinge to their to the stripes on the helmet and to the helmet logo and to the face mask. And the Jets patch that's always on their jerseys, it's still the forest green rather than the Kelly green they're wearing right now. And so it's really kind of weird. It doesn't match. The Bills uniform, on the other hand, if they're wearing the white pants, I would even though red's not their thing, if they had white helmet, red jersey, white pants, I could dig that for an alternate uniform. I think that would look really sharp.
Sure. Yeah. Well, anyway, getting back to the Chiefs game.
Yes.
We've seen the Broncos have success in pressuring Alex Smith into throwing some dangerous passes. Into throwing some,
and even disguising pressure that forces him. I mean, I look back at his fourth quarter interception
to Chris Harris.
Yes, back in Week 2, and the Broncos show a gap blitz, and then they pull back, and they only rush 4 men. But it so discombobulated the Chiefs and Alex Smith that he made an errant throw. He never adjusted. It's like he assumed the blitz was still coming when it wasn't there, and he had a hurried throw. It's like he was being chased by shadows almost. And that's what the Broncos, when the Broncos' defense is working, it's not just what they're doing, it's what they're showing and what they're disguising. It's it keeps an opponent off guard. So I think you're going to see more of that, even though not going to have Aqib Talib. All signs point to not having DeMarcus Ware. You know, looks like Shaq Barrett's going to play more than he has at any point. They're hoping to have Shane Ray back. He's made good progress so far. That'll help the depth at outside linebacker. But you're even with the Broncos' depth and Bradley Roby playing every down, we know how good Roby can be. You're still down two Pro Bowlers.
Yeah.
You're not, I mean, you're not necessarily going to have an apples for apples replacement. We talk about next man up, and that's fine, but it's not always quite the same.
Right. Well, I think one of the other things that the Broncos will try and do after kind of getting out of whack, as I think someone quoted from post-game against the Colts, is that their balance on offense was you know, thrust out of, I don't know if it's normalcy that's kind of found against, you know, the Packers, you know, most recently before that game, between the run and the pass, and they only ran the ball 14 times against the Colts, and to not much success.
Yes.
A 2.5 yard average.
Well, they got away from the run, but I think, you know, Kubiak made a good point when he was asked about it at his press conference on Thursday, and he said, well, we're behind 17-0.
Right.
I mean, that's going
that forces contribute. Your hand.
Yeah, your play calling changes, and you have to adapt to the situation. The other thing I think that really hurt the Broncos was you had Ronnie Hillman coming off a thigh injury, and he didn't look the same.
Mm-hmm.
It was the running game was much stronger when you had C.J. Anderson in the backfield, who appears to be healthy. He had some injury concerns throughout the first half of the season. Ever since the bye, he looks like he looks stellar, and he averaged nearly 5 yards a carry, albeit only 7 carries against Indianapolis. So maybe the balance, maybe it means C.J. Anderson gets a little more work than Ronnie Hillman on Sunday. But if as long as the game is close, I think you're going to see the Broncos make a more concerted effort to get the run to get the running game going, knowing what it does for the offense. I mean, you look at the Packers game, and you got the running game going, you got the play action game going, everything just clicked. Broncos. Yep. The Broncos need to shoot to 4 games like that in the future. You know, not the longest pass play, obviously, because you had the Emmanuel Sanders touchdown. But I thought their most well executed pass plays were in the Packer game. And part of that was because they had the running game going and the play action fed off of it.
And to do that, they will have to avoid getting down into those double digit deficits, one that they had against the Chiefs.
And that's when they started doing a lot of shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
After they fell behind 14-0, they basically just they did a pivot on the offensive game plan, did a lot more shotgun, and you know with the help of a takeaway, they had it back to a tie game at halftime, and then just went from there.
But you can't count on that happening.
No,
I mean they did very well in scoring quickly, getting a turnover, and then scoring quickly again before the halftime to even things up.
Right.
And, I mean, the offense was just as resilient against the Colts when they evened the game up in the third quarter. But you can't count on punt return touchdowns. You can't count on interception return for touchdowns.
Right. And that's another thing. And that's also a key point for the Broncos going forward as you're doing kind of a midseason assessment. You can't count on a lot of explosive plays from the defense and the special teams. Like, takeaways aren't necessarily going to be there. Pick sixes and fumble sixes aren't necessarily going to be there. And they were an essential part of the Broncos' equation for success in the first 6 games. And in the last couple of games, they haven't had the takeaways. And certainly in the Indianapolis game, the Broncos also had 2 giveaways on interceptions, and both of them proved costly. One led to a touchdown. One led to the Colts' drive that ground out the last 6 minutes of the game. So the offense, it's incumbent upon that unit to cut the giveaways. Can't have as many turnovers as it's had. If you're having multiple interceptions every game through this year, 13 interceptions off of Peyton Manning's right arm, 3 interceptions against Cleveland, 2 interceptions against two interceptions against the Colts, and then going farther back from that, 2 interceptions against the Raiders, 2 interceptions against the Vikings. So multiple interception games in 4 of the last 5. That's something their offense has to fix in a hurry, or else the Broncos are at best case, frankly, going to be sitting there, you know, playing in the first round and won't get a bye. They've got to fix this.
And I do want to touch on special teams because we haven't had a punt return for a touchdown in a long time.
Wait, okay. It's only been 2 years.
2 years is a long time.
To me, it's not a long time because it took the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who I grew up watching, it took them two games into their 19th season until they had a kickoff or punt return. They didn't get a touchdown off a kickoff return until their 32nd season.
That doesn't even sound like a real thing.
I will never forget, and I was actually not at the game when Vernon Turner had the first punt return in 1994 because I was at college, I was at Mizzou, but I'll never forget seeing it like on TV at a sports bar, just going
tears
crazy.
Welled up
almost had tears flowing at that point. So when you say, oh, it's been a long time, it's been over 2 years, I'm thinking, no. Okay. That's nothing.
Well, it's been a while since they've had explosive plays, period, in punt return.
Yes.
I mean,
the last one that was nearly a touchdown, you could say, oh, it was a near miss on nearly a touchdown. You'd have to go back to the divisional round in January of 2014 when Eric Decker got one of the turf monster incidents, along with the one in 2012 when he caught the pass from Manning. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about having sure hands and preventing turnovers in situations like punt returns and special teams.
And that's what you're concerned about with Omar Bolden. He's learning. He's basically learning how to return punts. He hasn't done much of it before. And so
he's done six punt returns over his 4 seasons in the NFL.
And he didn't do it in college either.
Did not do it in college.
So that's,
and that was all in preseason.
Yeah.
I don't know if I said that.
Yeah, so his experience is limited on that. And so basically, he's still learning how to field the ball and how to react to it. And even he'll say that he prefers handling kickoffs to punts. And kickoffs, it's the easier discipline because you get some run up. You generally don't have to encounter coverage guys until you've gone 15 or 20 yards or so. Whereas on punt returns, you've got to make that decision knowing you've got whether to fair catch or not field it or field it and return it, knowing you've got traffic bearing down on you. So good call by Omar Bolden to take it, and then of course he's got very good acceleration, got up to speed really quick up the right sideline, some nice blocks, and he was gone. It'll be interesting to see how they handle the punt return duties going forward. Do you put Emmanuel Sanders back there as the punt catcher inside the 10-yard line from time to time? I could see that happening, but Omar Bolden, certainly as explosive as he's been, I think he's going to get most of the looks going forward.
I mean, injuries might force their hand in that issue.
Right, because Sanders hasn't practiced all week as we record this. Now, Kubiak expects him to practice on Friday. I think there's some optimism that he's going to play on Sunday. Similar to Evan Mathis back in week six.
Before the bye.
Yeah, it was before the Browns game. Didn't practice, end up playing in the game and playing extensively. I could see that happening as well, but I think they'll probably leave him off punt returns. And the thing with Sanders, of course, he's hobbling a little bit because he had that ankle injury that he suffered on the first play of the game and then came back from against Indianapolis. And that probably is what forced Omar Bolden into the role in the first place.
Exactly.
And look how it worked. So
It's kind of amazing how much that one punt return boosted their season totals. They went from like 5 yards to 10. I think they had doubled it.
They went from being one of the league's worst teams in terms of overall return average, kickoffs, and punts to one of the best.
Small sample size impact.
Right, but hey, 83 yards, that's going to help them all
He's
the way
through. He's averaging 83 yards per punt return.
That's got to be a record.
Where can it go?
Yeah.
Well,
he could catch it. He could have a 90, or maybe he catches the 10-yard line on Sunday and goes 90 yards.
There you go.
And then his average is 86.5.
I was wondering, like, maybe if there's been someone out there who fielded their first career punt return and returned it for a touchdown.
And then never did it again.
That would, I don't think that's ever happened because
they would want you to do it
again. Right.
Unless you say, you know what?
I'm going out
on top. I can't do any better than that. Like Mike Arruzzioni after he won the gold medal with an 1980 Olympic team. He had NHL contracts and offers and said, you know, can't top this. I'm done.
Yeah. I think we might see some more Omar. Just going off injury concerns.
Positive living.
You know, that was kind of...
Positive yardage on the returns. Mundo positive yardage.
I was kind of laughing looking at the transcript from special teams coordinator Joe DeCamillis' press conference, and he used positive. It was a positive start for Omar Bolden, which is probably the most fitting thing you could say about the man who has taken positive living and transformed it into a movement, I guess you could say.
It's gone from a hashtag to a movement.
He now awards tickets.
It's a cause.
Tickets to someone who shows how they're making a positive impact in their community or
it's
something.
Actually really cool.
It is cool.
I remember asking him about it when the Broncos first drafted him back in 2012. Because the positive living thing started down at Arizona State.
Right, because he had his injury.
Yeah, and it's just taken on a life of its own. I like guys that use the platform that they have in the NFL and put it to well, positive use. Like Omar Bolden, like Brandon Marshall raising awareness on domestic violence. You know, and so many guys having the causes that are dear to their heart.
I think that's one of the difficult things for them is figuring out where to kind of, you know, where to kind of focus their what message they want to send or how they want to make an impact.
Yeah.
I was doing a story for, if you're a Notre Dame fan, I guess you might see this in your mailbox or some kind of program they're doing. And they asked me to write about David Bruton and his Bruton's Books Foundation. Bruton's Books Program, which is part of his foundation. And I've covered a few of his events, so I've written about that before, but it allowed me a chance to kind of sit down with him and kind of see how he came to the decision to do that. And obviously he has a history in education with being a substitute teacher back in the lockout. And he's also been a teacher's assistant when he was in high school.
Oh, wow.
So he always knew that he would kind of want to do education or something in that regard. And then he was able to kind of figure it out with Bruton's Books, being able to extend his love for reading to people who maybe don't have that same ability to just read books.
Really cool. I mean, that's
a unique way. Like him and
Vaughn's vision and Bruton's Books. And I think what's interesting is you see guys, I wouldn't say they're trying to one-up each other, but someone gets an idea and then they say, oh, you know, what can I do? And it's almost like you get a little bit of positive. There you go. Positive peer pressure to come up with something. And that's actually one of the cooler things about this locker room is that these guys have, you know, have their minds and their hearts in so many good places.
I think one of the things is that there's such a challenge. I mean, obviously there's tons of issues you could try and take a whack at and things that are very broad, things that are very general. And by kind of narrowing your scope to things that you might not think of, like underprivileged kids who don't have the ability to get glasses.
Yes.
Or
and I think
tutors.
That's part of it, like you say, the narrowing the scope. I mean, if you cast too wide a net and try to be all things to all people, it's kind of overwhelming. But if you focus on, you know, one thing, and if enough players focus on that one thing that's near and dear to their heart, like, you know, Brian Greasy with, you know, children who are grieving from the loss of one of their parents because he lost his mother at a young age. And that's why Judy's House exists here in Denver and has been such a wonderful success story for him and, you know, has really helped a lot of grieving children and their families beyond just themselves over the years as well. You know, and a lot of it, and the other thing is, it's, you know, like, it's personal. These personal stories kind of lend themselves, I think, to having charitable endeavors that are really from the heart.
Right.
You know, it's something when you're Vaughn Miller and you've worn glasses your entire life and you'll probably wear thick glasses for the rest of your life.
And it's something you're proud of.
And something you're proud of. But knowing that not everyone has the resources that he had and has today.
Right.
You know, well, this is, you know, making sure a kid has glasses so he or she can see and read you know, it means something to him. It's an, you know, he's fully invested in it. It's really cool to see guys find these causes that touch their hearts. Mm-hmm. And you know, use the many. Cliche, take the ball and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on for a while, but I mean, like Demaryius Thomas with his childhood that was very difficult, as mm-hmm. we all know. His camp every summer is something, you know, a lot of players kind of do camps, but the way he interacts with the kids is just, I mean, you can go back and look at photo galleries or whatever mm-hmm. we did on it during the summer when we did, when we went out there. I mean, he got Larry Fitzgerald to show up. That's mm-hmm. that's incredible. I don't know. Anyway, I just think that's pretty cool. Some of the guys being able to take their personal experiences.
It's not just about football. Football is a conduit. Football is, you know, opens a door.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to be about more than just that. That's, you know, I think most good people will agree on that.
Yeah. So we'll leave this podcast on a positive living note. Hopefully the team will bounce back as we have this week by getting our podcast off the ground a day earlier.
Oh, by the way, Charlotte, we have to mention the Queen City somewhere. There you go. I just mentioned it.
Okay. All right. That goes out to whoever it was who doesn't like that. Anyway, we'll be back next week, hopefully, with Back on Track in the win column. And we'll be back on the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes if you so care.